me a multiplication table, I read off the Fs, and immediately I construct generators. Okay? Right? They are just given by the multiplication around the origin. Okay? What would I need to check to prove my claim that they obey, that they always define a representation? Can someone tell me? What do I need to check if I want to claim that this defines a representation? So I was making the following claim. I was telling that we saw that for SO3, the generators, the components of the generators, were given by the structure constants. We saw it was a coincidence that this F on ABIJ. I'm wondering, can we always define a representation by using the structure constants in this way? What would we need to check? If we want to make this claim that this always defines the representation, what do we need to check? No, that's too complicated. We don't need to check that. We need to check that indeed these J's obey these commutation relations. Exactly. Felix, right? As Felix was saying, we need to check that these J's, when plugged into the commutation relation, we need to check the commutation relations. Okay? Now, if we plug this, plugging JAIJ into the commutation relation gives us the following relation. FB, when I write down explicitly this multiplication of matrices, I get the following relation. FBCD, FAD, plus FABD, FCDE, plus FCAD, FBD equal to 0. This is what we get. Okay? This is equivalent to that. And we want to ask ourselves, is this 0 or not? And the answer is yes, it is 0, because it is equivalent to writing that JA commutator of JB with JC plus cyclic permutations is equal to 0. So I write this plus two terms, which are just the cyclic rotations of the indices, and this is equal to 0. Okay? So let's recapitulate the logic. This relation is true. Everyone probably saw this relation in quantum mechanics, right? This is just, you just expand commutator, which is the definition of commutator. So this follows from the definition of commutator. For any object A, B, C, this is true. This is not particular to any algebra or anything. Just product of elements of matrices obey this. Right? This is just definition of commutator. So this is trivially true. But now, if I use the definition, what is B with C? This is an F. What is J with F times G? Another F. I get quadratic relations in F. So this, which is trivially true, just definition of commutator, implies this relation. But this relation is nothing but what we need to check. Okay? So this relation is true. Okay? So the statement that it obeys, that it is a representation, is equivalent to the commutation relations. And the commutation relations are nothing but this identity here, which is called the Jacobi identity. Okay? So, and this representation here, a very important one, is what is called the adjoint representation. Okay? What is the dimension of the adjoint representation? The dimension of the adjoint representation is the same as the range of A, right? These indices of F run from 1 to the number of generators. So the dimension of the adjoint, it's a particular representation. The dimension of the adjoint is equal to the number of generators. For example, for SO3, we have 3 generators, and the adjoint is 3-dimensional. Okay? For SU2. For SO3. Okay? So it's the number of real parameters needed to parameterize the group. Okay. Now, because I need it for an example that I'm going to do. Okay, just before moving on, sorry. Okay, any doubt about this? This might be a bit abstract, but we saw an explicit example. This rotation was just the adjoint representation, and we saw that it always defines a representation, and it's a very important one called the adjoint representation. Any doubts on why this is a representation, on the dimensions, on whatever? No? Okay. Think if you have some doubts. So, let's go back to SU2. We were mostly in SO3, so let's go back to SU2. So, let's go back to SU2, which is the group of matrices U, which are 2 by 2, such that U dagger U equal 1, determinant of U equal 1. Okay? So the property, so U, if I expand it close to the origin, is 1 plus I theta, again some theta dot j, U dagger is equal to 1 minus I theta dot j dagger, right? I'm just taking the dagger, but this must be equal, because of this property, to U minus 1, which is just 1 minus I theta dot j, right, to linear order. I'm, of course, working to linear order, because this gives 1 minus theta square when I multiply U times U dagger. And therefore, j dagger must be equal to j. So we are thinking, so you see that the group is a set of unitary matrices. The algebra is the set of Hermitian matrices, right? So this was what you were asking, I think, in the beginning, right? So we see that SU2, or in general SUN, nothing here was particular to SU2, the fact that it's 2 by 2, I never mentioned it, the generators of SUN are N times N Hermitian matrices. What is the basis of 2 by 2 Hermitian matrices? This is not rhetoric. What is the basis of SU2 of 2 by 2 Hermitian matrices? The spin matrix, right? The Pauli matrices is the basis. So for SU2, a basis is given by JA, which is equal, for example, the spin matrices, 1/2 of sigma A, right? Where these are just the Pauli matrices. Sigma Z, 1, minus 1, 0, 0, etc. Okay? Now we can compute these commutation relations between these generators. Let's compute it. JA with JB is equal to I epsilon ABC JC. This is what we get if you compute. we got the same as for SO3. This is the same that we got for SO3. Yes?
Is there another condition that they have to be traceless?
Good. There is a condition that they have to be traceless. That's a good point. So the generators of SUN are Hermitian matrices. I use this condition. I didn't use yet the condition that determinant is equal to 1. Okay? So let's write. The generators of UN, I raised the S, are N by N Hermitian matrices. Now let's impose the condition that the determinant is 1 for S UN, determinant of U is equal to 1. So determinant of 1 plus I theta dot J is equal to 1. Right? Now determinant of a matrix is equal to exponential of trace of log of that matrix. Okay? Is this relation clear? Have you seen this before? This is just a simple statement that what is determinant of M? Determinant of M is lambda 1 plus lambda 2 plus etc. plus lambda N. No, sorry, times. It's just a product of eigenvalues. Right? This is just product over lambda I. These are the eigenvalues. Is this clear? That determinant of M of a matrix is the product of eigenvalues? Because determinant of M is equal to the determinant of a matrix which diagonalizes the matrix, then the eigenvalues, lambda 1 up to lambda N, and then U minus 1. And under the determinant, U and U minus 1, I just get product of three determinants, and this determinant and this determinant are the inverse of each other, so I get just determinant of the diagonal matrix. Is it clear? What about this side? This trace, this log of M, again, if I diagonalize, this trace of log of M is the matrix which has log of lambda 1 on the diagonals, log of lambda 1, log of lambda N, diagonalized by the same U minus 1. And when I take the trace is again insensitive to this U and U minus 1. So I get the trace is just the sum of logs, and exponential of sum of logs is the product. So I get exponential of sum of log of lambda I, which is the same as product of lambda I. Okay? So this relation is a very important one. You will see it all the time in relativity and in many other places. Log of determinant of M is trace of log of M. Where? Okay? Is the proof clear? I just diagonalize, and the diagonalization matrices are irrelevant for both the trace and the determinant, and therefore the identity is satisfied for the eigenvalues, therefore it's always true. Okay, so what does this condition imply, the determinant being equal to 1? The condition that the determinant is equal to 1 implies that the trace log of the determinant is 0, so trace of log of 1 plus I theta dot j is equal to 0. And when I'm expanding to leading order, log 1 plus x is just theta dot j. So this just implies that trace of j is equal to 0. Okay? So for SU2, a basis of traceless Hermitian matrices is this one. Okay? They are all traceless. So you see that for SUN, you need Hermitian matrices, which must be traceless. This gives you a basis of generators. The fact that it's traceless gives the determinant being equal to 1, and the fact that it's unitary gives you that J's must be Hermitian. Can I move on? Good. So we saw that we get the same as SO3. So the structure constants, this F, for SU2, A, B, C, are equal to the Fs for SO3. This is no surprise. It should be so. Because SO3 is equal, and by this equal now I mean locally, because we know that globally it's not. There is some identification involved. This Z2 is the same as SU2. Both are locally given by this four sphere, by this three sphere. It is just that one of them is identified, but that's something global. But locally, they must be so, because we saw that they are the same. And this algebra, this F, tells you how to go away from the origin. It's something local. It doesn't tell you about global identifications of the group. So the algebra ought to be the same, because locally the groups are the same. Okay. So, more precisely, we add that SO3 was equal to SU2 over Z2. Let's just see this condition one more time now in this SU2 language. If you consider now an element U associated to a rotation theta along EZ, okay, this is equal to exponential of theta times sigma Z. This is equal to exponential of theta, of I theta, times sigma z over 2. These are the generators which give the SU2 algebra. Okay? So U for 2 pi ez is equal to exponential of I 2 pi 1 half 1 minus 1. And this is just the matrix minus 1, minus 1, minus the identity. Okay? So a rotation by 2 pi does not give you 1, it gives you minus 1. This is what we are used. This is how fermions transform. If you rotate a fermion, you get, by 2 pi, you get a minus sign. Okay? So we get minus 1 and not plus 1 as we expect for SO3. Now the elements 1, the matrix 1 and the matrix minus 1 are, and here is one more definition, the center of SU2. Okay? The center of a group, okay? The center is the set of elements of G which commute with all other elements. So, of course, the identity matrix commutes with everyone, and minus the identity matrix always. And 1 and minus 1, if you multiply this matrix, 1 with 1, you get 1. Minus 1 with minus 1, you get 1. 1 with minus 1, you get minus 1. So this define also Z2. This is the same group as Z2. 1 times 1 is 1, minus 1 times minus 1 is 1 again. It's again the group of reflections of 2 points. So another way of writing this relation is that SO3 is SU2 over the center of SU2. Okay, this was just an excuse for introducing. Yes?
So the pressure constants are sufficient to recover the full group?
Global properties such as identifications or so, no, because the structure constant only tells you how to go away from the identity in finite region. Doesn't tell you that there might be some global problems with defining the exponential map with infinite radius of convergence. There might be, local it must be okay for finite rotations, but there might be identifications, some ratios like this, some discrete ratios that you might not see. Okay, so we will see later that SO4, we will see that SO4 is SU2 times SU2. It's the product of two SU2. It's a nice relation. And I will want to use some, I have a nice example for SO4. And for that I need everyone to be completely familiar with the addition of angular momenta in SU2. Because we will use the fact that the SU2 irreducible representations are parametrized by the highest weight, or can be parametrized by highest weights, and we have the spin 0, spin 1, spin 2, spin 3, spin 4 representations, right? The representations of SU2 are characterized by the spin, and we will use that to study the representations of SO4. Now, should I review representations of SU2 and addition of angular momenta, or will I put everyone to sleep? It's like a Solariparam. So I can review the representations of SU2 that you saw in quantum mechanics and the addition of angular momenta, or I can assume that you know it. If I review it, it will take me probably 20 minutes. It is important that you all are familiar with it, but if no one... So, you think? You will do it. Okay, good. So it's not my fault then. Good. So I want to study. So our goal now, let's study the irreducible representations, I reps. Finite irreducible representations of SU2, okay? Which is the same as SO3 model of this small detail. Okay. So, but I will be fast, and it's your test to slow me down if you want. But I should be fast, otherwise this is too painful for some of you. So how do we do? We introduce creation and annihilation operator J plus minus, which I can define. Let me choose this normalization, 1 over square root of 2, jx plus minus I, jy, so that the commutation relation now read jz with j plus minus is equal to plus minus j plus minus, and j plus with j minus is equal to jz. So these are the SU2 commutation relations. Okay? Now, these matrices don't commute, of course, so we cannot diagonalize them all at the same time. But we can choose a basis where one of them is diagonal. So let's choose the basis. Let's choose the basis where JZ is diagonal. Okay? The highest eigenvalue of jz is what I will define as small j, okay? And the other eigenvalues I will use m for the other eigenvalues, okay? So we have, of course, that jz acting on m is equal to m times M. Okay, good. Now, Jz acting on J plus minus, which acts on M, is equal, using the commutation relations, to J plus minus Jz acting on M plus minus J plus minus acting on M. So here we are using the commutation relations, which is equal to M plus 1 acting on J plus minus acting on M, where here we are just using that Jz on M is equal to M. Let's call this 2, 2. Okay? So from this, we see that this state is nothing but some normalization constant, but otherwise, this is the state. We see that J plus with M, there is some normalization constant, but otherwise, it is the state M plus 1. This is a number. Okay? Because this Jz acting on that state gives M plus 1 times that state. Okay? We see from this that J plus raises, therefore, M by 1, and that J minus lowers M by 1. Okay? So they are creation and annihilation operators. Right? So we see immediately that for a given M, J minus M must be an integer. Otherwise, I would start raising and I would not hit J, because there is a maximum, because I'm considering finite irreducible representations. So by construction, this matrix has some dimension. I didn't find out yet what is the dimension, but it's some finite dimension. So by starting at some point and going up, this M, this J minus M must be an integer, because I must hit J. Okay. When M is at the maximum, by definition, we cannot go further. So J plus kills the state with eigenvalue J. So J plus acting on J is equal to 0. J plus acting on J is equal to 0. I could put some label alpha to denote the degeneracy, and at the end see that there is none. But that's a good point, actually. Yeah. So Jz, I'm saying that the eigenvalues M are labeled by M, but why there is no degeneracy, we will see that indeed there's no need for a degeneracy. So for now, let's imagine you can put an alpha everywhere, which would be the degeneracy, and at the end see that we don't need to include alpha, and therefore alpha, you can drop that in. Okay? Did everyone understood the doubt? Well, the question was, why here I have just one state with M? As I said, Sebastian, you can put alpha everywhere, and then at the end see that alpha never played any role, and therefore there's no degeneracy. Where alpha would be the index which would label the degeneracy. Now, you might think that, okay, so we are still very far away from finding the matrix elements of J, but actually we are done. Once we arrive here, we are basically done. I can write immediately what are the elements of the representation. So we are almost done. So the elements are what? So if I have M JZ with M, this is just M. Okay? If I have M plus 1 J plus M, this by definition is this normalization NM. And by conjugating this relation, I can derive that M minus 1 J minus with M is equal to the conjugate of NM N minus 1. And the other elements are 0. So here are the elements of the irreducible representations of SU2. This NM, which looks somehow some boring thing, just some normalization, is actually everything we need. So we just, this seemingly boring detail, just this normalization, this is actually everything you need. If I give you NM, we are done. So we just need the normalization constant. So it's one of these examples where the normalization is actually extremely important, right? Okay, so how to find NM? Now, I had planned to do this in two ways. One of them preparing you to describe the roots later. But since we will not do roots and weights, I will just do it in the most straightforward way, which is actually the one you know. So how would you construct this NM? How would you construct this NM? So the idea is we introduce J square, which is the total angular momentum operator, which is JZ square plus JX square plus JY square, which is just JZ square plus J minus plus J minus J plus. This is the quadratic Casimir. Of SU2. Or a quadratic Casimir of SU2. Actually, there are not anymore, but in principle, for Lie algebra, there could be more than one. What is a Casimir? It's again an object which commutes with the algebra of SU2. So this object, you can check it, that the commutator of J square with any JA is equal to 0. Okay? Furthermore, of course, J square acting on J is equal to It's equal to this, and I can use the SU2 commutation relations to furthermore write this as JZ square plus JZ plus twice J minus J plus using the commutation relations. So of course J square acting on the highest weight J is equal to J square plus J, which is J plus 1. Why? Because J plus kills the highest weights. Right, so because of this relation here, which we can call three guys, right? This is because of this with three. Okay? Now, but what is J square acting, for example, on J minus J? What is it equal to? What would you say it's equal to? It commutes with everything. So it commutes with all J. So in particular, it commutes with J minus. Right? Because it commutes with J minus, I can eat it directly on this. So it's, again, J plus 1 times J minus J. More generically, J square acting on the state M is J plus 1 acting on M. Okay, so this J square measures directly this J, which was by definition the highest weight of JZ. Because we are considering a finite representation. We diagonalize some matrix. There is one eigenvalue, which is the biggest one. Okay? So what do we want to compute? We want to compute this constant here. So let's compute this normalization by considering the absolute value of that state. So I multiply that state by the Hermitian conjugate. So I have this. Right? This is nothing but, let me put a 2 here. Twice this is twice the absolute value of this nm squared. Okay? But what is this quantity here? This is just the absolute value of, the expectation of j squared minus jz squared minus jz on m. Okay? But what is this? So here I'm using this relation here, that this is equal to j squared. So I'm using star, if you want. Okay? And now, jz, how does jz x on m? It gives just m times m. How does j squared x on m? It is jj plus 1 times m. So this is just jj plus 1 minus m, m plus 1, m, which is just j plus 1 minus m plus 1. Okay? So here are the representations, the irreducible representations of SU2. These are the group elements where this nm is equal to the square root of that stuff, which I can write in the form j plus m, j minus m plus 1 over 2. Okay? So this defines the irreducible representation. For each j, the elements of the irreducible representation of SU2. Okay. Any question here? So the irreducible representations are parameterized by j, which is the highest value. And then those are the elements of the representation. Now, if you think that j minus acting on minus j, on the state minus j, okay, okay. So if you look here, you see that this norm, this one here, n m minus 1 is equal to 0 for m equal to minus j. If you look at the expression that I wrote there for n m, that's clear. For m equal to minus j. So which means that j minus acting on minus j is equal to 0. So minus j is the lowest, if you want, eigenvalue. It's not possible to lower anymore. If you try to lower, you get 0. Okay? So the basis is you start with j minus 1, etc., up to minus j. Okay? Whenever I lower here, to lower, I apply j minus. The lowering operator, etc. Always to lower. That's the first element. That's the last element. For this to be possible in steps of 1, it means that the dimension of the representation of highest eigenvalue of highest eigenvalue j is equal to 2j plus 1, and j is half integer. Okay? If you want to go from j to minus j in integer steps, it means that j must be half integer. Okay? So I think we derived everything about SU2. So dimension is 2j plus 1, j is half integer, those are the matrix elements of SU2. Okay, this other derivation I have here, I think I don't need to go over it. Okay, good. So, any question here? Let me do addition of angular momenta in 5 minutes. Because, again, this will be used for what follows. Okay. So let me remind you of addition of angular momenta. Okay. So let's suppose we have a system with two parts, with highest weights. I have two spins, if you want. Highest weights, J1 and J2. So my basis of states is I have M1 tensor, or M1, I can just write it like this. M1, M2. Where M1 goes from minus J1 up to J1, and M2 runs from minus J2 up to J2. Okay? So there are this basis has 2 J1 plus 1 times 2 J2 plus 1 elements. It's exactly the analog of what we did when we considered the tensor product of two vectors and I had 9 elements, 3 times 3. Now it's a bit more general. I have, in general, for J1, if J1 is 1, it's the previous case that we did already. Okay. Now suppose I want to rotate this tensor product. Let's again go to the tensor product representations that we saw in the beginning. So under rotations now let's do some SU2 rotation. SU2 is the real rotation group. It's not SO3. Fermions exist, so it's SU2. So under rotations, M1, the state M1, M2, goes to some rotation matrix E to the I, theta A, J A. These generators now live in a bigger, they are bigger dimensional. They have dimension 2J plus 1 times 2J plus 1 square. So they live in space 1 times 2. Okay, so as MT was asking, this would be the analog of these 9x9 generators if you would consider the vector 1. They are some big generators. Okay, now this matrix here has some components, M1, M2, M1 prime, M2 prime. Right, I can think of this as a matrix which has components, as before, 9x9, exactly the analog of our rotation matrix, which acts on the states M1 prime, M2 prime. Okay, this is how the state is rotated. Now, again, what is this J? A, 1 tensor 2, which is a matrix with elements, as we said, M1, M2, M1 prime, M2 prime. Right? So when I exponentiate, I rotate. I can consider infinitesimally, then I rotate this or I rotate this. To linear order, I'm only rotating one of them. Right? I write explicitly the rotation for this guy, the rotation for this guy. Right? It's 1 plus theta j times 1 plus theta j. I keep only the linear term. So it is just addition of two angular momenta. So it is just J of representation 1 with indices M1, M1 prime times nothing, so delta function M2, M2 prime plus doing nothing M1, M1 prime times the angular momenta in the representation 2 M2, M2 prime. Okay? Is this clear for everyone? I'm just writing just the fact that we know that this side here is nothing but 1 plus theta J1 times M1 prime, and then 1 plus theta J2 M2 prime. So when I collect the term linear in theta, I see that it either acts only on M1, so it acts on M1 and does nothing in M2, or it acts only on M2, so here is M2 and it does nothing on M1. Okay? There are other ways of writing this relation. It might be useful if you start seeing some of this notation. You will see it a lot in other lectures. I can write that J in this tensor product is J in the space 1, and then I do nothing in space 2, so tensor product with the identity in space 2. Okay, this would be the identity in space 2, plus I do nothing in space 1, tensor product with I rotate space 2. Okay? Or, in a less rigorous way, I can say that the total angular momentum of 1 plus 2 is just the sum of angular momentum. Here? Yeah. Thank you. Sorry? And above here as well. Thank you. Good. Thank you. Okay. Good. So now, we want to see that there exists a basis. So we have some representation now. We have a big representation. So we want to show that this big representation of this huge size decomposes as a sum of irreducible representations, IRFs. So we want to show that this can be brought to diagonal form. Okay? Where here I have the representation J1 plus J2, J1 plus J2 minus 1, etc., up to the representation absolute value of J1 minus J2. And then zeros everywhere else. Okay? So I want to show that the representations decompose into blocks. This is the famous result that you have seen, that the product of two angular momenta is J1 plus J2, is the direct sum, plus J1 plus J2 minus 1, plus dot, 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 plus the absolute value of J1 minus J2. Right? Everyone saw this angular momenta result, right? In the language of irreducible representation, this means this. This means that this big matrix, there exists a smarter basis. This is a smart choice of basis. Smart choice of basis. Where those big generators, JA, this is a huge matrix. What's the size of this matrix? It's 2J1 plus 1 times 2J2 plus 1. This is the size of this big matrix. Decomposes into these blocks. Each of them, for example, this block, has, of course, dimension 2J plus 1. Of course, these are the dimensions of J, with J equal to J1 plus J2, etc. Okay? So it's splits into blocks, each of them of dimension 2j plus 1, where j is the is the, what I wrote in the diagonal, and then there are zeros everywhere. And these here are the irreducible representations, the IREPs that we saw before in alpha. Alpha is this box here. So we saw these IREPs, and this tensor representation decomposes into the irreducible representations in this way. Okay? So let's construct this basis. Let's find this basis. How to see that indeed this rotation decomposes in this way? So how to construct such bases? Okay. Now, first of all, we notice that, so we want to prove, our goal is to prove this relation and to see at the same time how to construct the basis, the right basis, such that this relation holds, or to show that the basis exists. So how would we show this relation? So first, let's show that J1 plus J2 is in this tensor product. So let's show first that if we multiply J1 times J2, this contains the representation J1 plus J2. Okay? Why? Because J minus to the K, this is true, because J minus to the K acting on the state J1, J2, okay? Form a representation okay, so if I act with JZ on this state, I get this J minus is J minus 1 plus J minus 2. So if I act with JZ on this state, I get K, I get J1 plus J2 minus K. If I act with J minus on this state, I get another state here. And if I act with J plus, I just undo one action of J minus. So they form a closed representation. Right? Acting on JZ doesn't touch the state. Acting on J minus lowers, increases K. Acting with J plus decreases K. So they form a representation. What representation is it? Let's compute K equal to 0. For k equal to 0, jz acting on this state is equal to j1 plus j2 acting on the state, and j plus acting on the state k equal to 0 is equal to 0. Okay? So these states here, this is the definition, these states form the j1 plus j2 representation. Okay, so this is the basis that we want to put here. So here we want to put these states, if you want, D to the K, J minus to the K, acting on J1, J2. So we saw how to construct this representation here inside all the possible states that we have of the form M1, M2. This is a particular set, the particular form of a state. Okay. Now let's show that the next one is also there. So we showed that the representation J plus 1 is there, and we understood explicitly how to construct such bases. Okay. So now let's try to find the representation J1 plus J2 minus 1, the next one. So let's try to write them, to write this representation of the form J minus to the K acting on alpha times J1 minus 1 J2 plus beta times J1 J2 minus 1. Okay? Again, they form a representation. I act with, and here, of course, one more point. Here, K runs, of course, from 0, I do nothing, up to J1, up to twice J1 plus J2. Okay? So, of course, the dimension is as it should be, twice J1 plus J2 plus 1. Okay? So K equals 0 is nothing, and if K is bigger than this, then I get 0. Now, for these states, because I start with the smallest JZ component, when K is equal to 0, JZ acting on this state, psi, is equal to J1 plus J2 minus 1. Okay? And we can tune alpha and beta. We can choose alpha and beta so that J plus acting on psi is equal to 0. Right? When J plus acts on this state, it gives J1, J2. When J plus acts on this state, it gives J1, J2. So I just fix alpha and beta so that the two terms cancel against each other. So I can tune alpha and beta so that JZ gives me J1 plus J2 minus 1, and it is an isosweight. Okay? But then, this is the representation J1 plus J2 minus 1 by definition. It's the highest weight. It's a representation by the same reason, because you act with JZ, J plus, and J minus, and you stay within the same space of states. It is an highest weight, because we can fix alpha and beta so that it is an highest weight. And it has this highest weight. So we found the representation J1 minus J2 minus 1. Okay. So, before moving on, we found already two of these representations. Let's make an observation we exhausted we already considered all states with total JZ equal J1 plus J2 and total JZ equal J1 plus J2 minus 1. There are no more states. With JZ equal J1 plus J2, it's obvious that it must be just a state, just this one when K is equal to 0. That's the only state which has JZ equal J1 plus J2. Right? JZ for the JZ acting on M1, M2 is equal to M1 plus M2 times M1, M2. Of course. So the only way I get J1 plus J2 is if they are both on the maximum that they can be. If I want to get, so this guy here, the only one which has J equal J1 plus J2 is the K equals 0 in the first group, in star 1. Let's call this group star 1, this symbol star 1, and let's call this group star 2. Okay? There's only one element which has J1 plus J2, which is the K equals 0 in the first group. Right? K equals 0 here is just a state J1, J2. With JZ equal J1 plus J2 minus 1, there are two possibilities. K equal 1 in the first group, or K equals 0 in the second group. So k equals 0 here as jz component equal to j1 minus 1 plus j2. And k equal 1 here, I lower the total jz component also as jz component j1 plus j2 minus 1. And of course, they are the two possible states. So I have only two. I have only a basis of two states. Right? These are the only two possible states. So these two give me a basis, and there are not any more states that I can consider. Okay? So this is a general pattern. When I try now to find the next representation, and I'm exhausting the states with the biggest jz possible. Okay? So for example, to find j1 plus j2 minus 2, we consider the family, again, j minus to the k, acting on alpha, j1 minus 2, j2, plus beta, j1 minus 1, j2 minus 1, plus gamma, j1, j2 minus 2. Okay? Where alpha, beta, and gamma are tuned so that this state is an highest weight. And in this way, this exhausts all states with j1 plus j2 minus 2. With jz equals j1 plus j2 minus 2. Okay? And this goes on forever, etc. Okay. And indeed, if you go on, a nice check that you can just run in Mathematica to check that we did not miss or did not count too many representations is just to see that the dimension of this matrix matches. So we can compute the sum from k equal to absolute value of j1 minus j2 up to j1 plus j2 of 2k plus 1. And if you run this in Mathematica, Mathematica gives you precisely 2j1 plus 1 times 2j2 plus 1, okay? Which is the dimension, as we said, of this matrix. And this is the dimension of each of the irreducible representations. Okay. Okay, good. Now, any question here? I know this is, of course, known to all of you. Okay. So, I want to remind you, or this might be slightly new, that we can also build higher spin representations of SU2 by considering several spins one-half, by fusing several spins one-half. We can get any representation, right? So if you fuse one half plus one half, we get one plus zero. So we get the symmetric and we get the triplet and the singlet. So by fusing spins one half, we can get higher representations. So how does it work more explicitly? So let's consider j equal one half, the representation j equal one half. Okay? So when you have j equal one half, then the basis of states, okay, the state wave function is just a psi I, where I is up or down. Okay, so I have just a wave function with two components, either up or down. When j is equal to 1, my wave function, the wave function, is psi I j plus psi j I, which I can define as psi with this notation I j, which stands for symmetrization. I introduced the same for anti-symmetrization, where again I and j are equal to plus or minus, to up or down. Right? These, of course, are the three components of the triplet, which are the plus plus, the plus minus 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 plus, and the minus minus. So it's on the, sorry, plus. Right? This is the spin one. When I multiply two spins, this is the basis of spin one. And the spin zero is the antisymmetric one. Up, down, minus, down, up. Right? This is exactly what we have done for this very simple case of 1/2 times 1/2. This is an highest weight, and then I apply J minus, and I create the triplet. And then this is an highest weight, which is orthogonal to this state here. So this is the spin zero. And indeed, the symmetric gives us the J equal to 1. And how many possibilities we have? We have 3. So of course, here, the dimension is 2J plus 1. And we could consider phi ij minus phi ji. This would be the anti-symmetric part. And of course, this, the only non-trivial component is plus minus 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 plus. The dimension, this is 1. The dimension here would be 0. Okay? And you can again see that if you think of this, if you know how to transform this guy, psi I transforms into u I j psi j, then you know how to transform these tensors, the symmetric and antisymmetric tensors. You just know how to transform each of the indices. And you can see that they transform into irreducible representations of SU2. Why? Because we saw. It's indeed the case. Okay? Now I'm giving you a slightly less trivial one. If you consider three indices, an object I, J, K. And the combination I, J, K plus psi, how did I, okay, plus psi chi A, J plus psi J, K, I plus psi J, I, K plus psi, I'm doing six terms, the six possible permutations. Plus psi ikj plus psi kji, which we define as psi totally symmetrized, ijk. Okay. You can count how many elements there are here. You can see that it's irreducible. And this is the spin 3/2 representation. So this is the, here is the spin 1, the symmetric. And here is the spin 0. And here is the spin 3/2, the spin 3/2 representation. Okay. Okay. The dimension of spin 3/2 is 2 times 3/2 plus 1, which is just equal to 4. And you can see that there are indeed 4 possible terms that you choose. That you can choose here, which are basically, if I start with plus, 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 minus, 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 or plus, 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 minus, and minus, minus, plus. Because since I symmetrize, the only thing that matters is how many plus I have and how many minus I have. Right? It doesn't matter the order that I start here because I'm symmetrizing. So the four states, this dimension four, is means that for that first one, I start with plus, 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 minus, minus, okay, plus, plus, minus, minus, or minus, minus, minus. There are these four states. Then I symmetrize, so it doesn't matter which one I start. This is the dimension four. Okay. Now, if you continue anti-symmetrizing more and more, you get the higher spin representations. Okay? So this goes on. Bless you. Okay? This goes on. If I put four indices, I define spin two. Okay? Yes?
Do you know that the dimension three and dimension one?
Here? J equals 1, dimension 3, thank you. And here dimension 1, thank you. Spin 0, 2 times 0 plus 1 is 1. Spin 1, 2 times 1 plus 1 is 3, thank you. And it's again the same reasoning. What is this 3? I start with plus plus and I symmetrize. I start with plus minus and I symmetrize. But I start with minus minus and I symmetrize. Okay? Here there are four possibilities. And now when I consider four indices, I have more possibilities now. Okay? So this spin 4 here, there will be, is it 4? So 1, 3 halves plus 1 half is 2, spin 2. Right? So there are now 5 possibilities. Right? So the dimension is 5, and the 5 states are basically how many spin up I have, which can be 0, 1, 2, 3, or 4. Okay. I can also construct stuff which has three indices, which is interesting, and make it boring. I can have, for example, I, J, K, okay, and decide to anti-symmetrize in the first two indices. And this gives me something, phi I, J, K, minus psi J, I, K. Okay? And this here would have dimension 1, dimension 3. Because I and J, they are anti-symmetrized, so I and J, they must be plus and minus, and then K can be, sorry, dimension 2, and then K can be whatever it wants. Right? Now I'll give you a graphical rule for understanding addition of angular momenta using just this total symmetrization or anti-symmetrization of individual atoms, of this individual spin 1 halves. Okay? So the way we can now understand addition of angular momenta is you give me two wave functions, two psi, one psi with two indices and another psi with another two indices, and then I get a bigger tensor. And now I can decompose it, as we saw in the previous time, as traceless, traceless symmetric, etc. So the decomposition now of the representations, we can analyze it very much in the same spirit as we saw in the very beginning, when we made tensor of two vectors, and we decompose it into traceless, traceless symmetric, anti-symmetric, we can do the same. You can now give me two SU2 tensors, for example, psi I and psi j, and with these two spin 1 halves, I can decompose it into the symmetric and the anti-symmetric part. And this is just the spin 0 and the spin 1. Okay? Sorry, when I write this, I mean this. Right? Where this symbol means that unsymmetrize and asymmetrize. And now if you give me higher spins and you multiply, you can also decompose the tensors and see what are the rules. The graphical rules are summarized in the following ways. I want to multiply J1 times J2. J1 times J2, each representation is represented by a row of boxes, tensor, another row of boxes. Let me consider... I didn't bring. Okay. Yeah, okay. Sorry. Let me see what kind of reasonable sizes should I choose not to have too many terms. So the number of boxes is the number of indices. So if I have spin 1 half, I have only one box. Okay, I didn't bring it. Okay, let me try to do it. So, J equal to 1 half is 1 box. J equal to 1 is 2 box. J equal 3 halves, I have 3 indices, so I have 3 boxes. Okay? So this, for example, with 5 boxes, this would be J1 equal to 5 halves. And let me multiply it with a guy with 3 boxes. J1 equal to 3 halves. J2 equal to 3 halves. Now, First, let's recall, what do we know the result should be? The result must be 5/2 + 3/2 + etc. plus absolute value of 5/2 - 3/2. In other words, it must be 5 + 3 = 8, it must be 4 plus ... plus 5/2 - 1. Okay, I can write it. It must be 4 plus 3 plus 2 plus 1. This must decompose into this spin, up from spin 1 up to spin 4. And the way it works is just by playing with boxes, combining boxes. The way it works is the following. Let me draw to you how I do this example, and from this example you can easily check any other example. So let me color them with two different colors. And now, I start playing with boxes, adding the orange boxes to the white ones. So one thing I can do is just put them here. Another thing I can do is put two of them here, and then the other one here. The other thing I can do is put just one of them here and two of them here. And the other thing I can do is put the three of them here. So the rule for, if you want to learn more about what these are what are called Young tableaus. This is just an appetizer, but it turns out that this Young tableaus allows you to understand all the irreducible representations of any SUN, not only of SU2. The rules are exactly the same, and there are a couple of rules for how to manipulate these boxes. In this case, the number of rows must always decrease as you increase the number of rows. So the number of boxes must always decrease. It's like piling boxes in a corner. And when I start adding orange boxes, in this case I cannot put two orange boxes on top of each other. With these two rules, these are the only possible configurations. So they must always be put the closest to the corner possible, and I cannot have more orange boxes in a given column than I have white boxes. So you see that in each line I have either only white or as many white as I have orange. But I don't have in any line, I never have one white and two oranges, for example. Right? And now let's try to interpret horizontal lines as symmetrization and vertical lines as anti-symmetrization. So this object means that I symmetrize all indices. So now let's think of this direction as symmetrization. Symmetrization. And let's think of this direction as anti-symmetrization. So for example, let me give you just an example before interpreting this picture. One box, I don't symmetrize at all, phi I. Two boxes, I symmetrize, phi I j. Two boxes like this, I anti-symmetrize, phi I j. Now more interesting, this guy here. This guy here, it's equal to, I anti-symmetrize first. Okay, here I will have to explain you exactly why this is the rule, but what I do is, I do this anti-symmetrization in these two indices. So, and this pattern goes on. So what happened here in this case? This is the interesting one. Because I anti-symmetrized, this I and j, now they must be plus minus or minus plus. So there is no choice for I and J. They are fixed. They must be the singlets. They must be in the singlets. So these two boxes here, they became trivial. I had an interesting object with three indices, and I decided to anti-symmetrize two, so I killed these two boxes. And indeed, this object here, at dimension 2. It was written here. This is at dimension 2. This object here is a spin 1/2. Basically, K can be either up or down. But I and J are already fixed. I cannot choose them. They must be plus minus, but they must be up down, minus down up. For K, I have two options, spin 1/2. So you see that whenever I have two vertical boxes, I can chop them out because I'm anti-symmetrizing and I am in SU2 and there are only two options. So if I anti-symmetrize at a matrix with only two options, then it means that I have 1, 2, minus 2, 1. I cannot have any other option. For SU3, the rules of the game would be that you would need more boxes when you anti-symmetrize. You would need to have three boxes to be able to kill. But for SU2, we see that whenever we have two boxes, we should kill them. Because we just anti-symmetrize, and when we anti-symmetrize those two indices, they become trivial and they must be in the singlet. So now let's apply this. So we kill, whenever we see two rows, we kill those two rows. Those two boxes in a column, sorry. So then, this is equal to the first guy, which has 1, 2, 3, which has 8 boxes, 3 plus 5, 8. The second one, these guys are killed now. Here, these guys are killed and these ones are killed. And here, these three guys are killed. So when you do it, you get this plus 6 plus 4 boxes plus 2 boxes. And this is precisely the result for the addition of angular momentum. This is precisely spin 4 plus spin 3 plus spin 1 plus, plus spin here 1, 2, 3 and 4. Okay? This is precisely the spin 5/2 times 3/2. By this plus, we mean, of course, this direct sum. Okay. Again, this was just an appetizer. As I told you, Young tableaus are an extremely powerful tool for studying representations. You give me some representation of SU3, any representation, any irreducible representation of SUN is a Young tableau. Multiply two irreducible representations, all you have to do is play with boxes. Start putting boxes on top of each other, seeing how many ways you can do it. And this gives you any decomposition of any product of two irreducible representations. Okay? So the idea is that an IREP of SUN is given by some Young tableau, for example, like this. And the product of two IREPs, one IREP tensor product with another IREP 2, is equal to a sum of distribution of Young tableaus in several ways, where you have some boxes of one color and some boxes of some other color. And you are just playing these games with boxes. Okay? And there exist rules for constructing these representations of SUN. How do we construct? These are just by studying tensor representations. You just build tensors and then decompose them into their irreducible parts. And then product of boxes means when you multiply two tensors, you decompose into symmetric, anti-symmetric, etc. And graphically, this amounts to some simple set of graphical rules for manipulating these boxes. And if you want to know more, I recommend that you see either Georgi or, I think for this maybe it's better, Jones' introduction to, which is called Group Theory, Representation, and Physics. Okay, so I think we can... we can call it a morning. And are there any doubts about, any questions about what I've done? I know it was a bit slow today, but I hope there was something new. And this afternoon, we will finish the discussion of SU2, SO3, and SO4. I will discuss a bit of SO4, and we will start being more mathematical oriented. So we will consider already an example of understanding some nice outcome of SO4 symmetry with Mathematica. Okay. So please don't forget to fill in the survey. See you tomorrow. See you in the afternoon.